The views expressed on this show by guests and the host on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Bill Bernier. Bill's an architect and he is a signatory to AE 9/11 Truth's petition, which is calling for a new investigation into the destruction of the three World Trade Center towers on September 11th, 2001. Now he is a board member with AE 9/11 Truth. So we'll be talking about that today later on in the interview. He's appeared in at least two documentaries that I know about. One of them is New York City Epicenters, the film put out by Spike Lee earlier in the year, and The Unspeakable, which is the film put out by AE 9/11 Truth. It came out, I believe, in November. So a lot to talk about there, and I always like having Bill on. Let's go ahead and add him in here. And Bill, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Hi, Andy. It's great to be here. Been here before, and really glad to be back.
All right, very good. So you know we're on video now, and we're still getting some growing pains as we go. I got my wireless earbuds in here. They might fall out of my ear every once in a while, but they actually come in pretty handy. So we're going to take advantage of this new format here. Everybody gets to see you. A lot of people have seen you in The Unspeakable and also in the Spike Lee documentary. And we saw you on the anniversary event. Now you're actually going to be more than a supporter here. You're going to be on the board. You actually already are. So talk about that. What does joining the board here at AE mean to you?
Well, Andy, 2021 was really a triple header for me. Being involved in the Unspeakable, being involved in Spike Lee's New York City Epicenters, and then joining the board. I mean, it was quite a year. And joining the board for me is something of how would you say it? I feel like I've finally arrived, like I've made it to a point with the organization where I can really make a difference. I have a long standing relationship with the group in that I joined in, I guess it was late 2007, early 2008, and it was right after they had made the first movie and they were looking at making the second movie. The Experts Speak Out, and I was asked to come down to New York and partake in that, and which I did. And I've done many things. I went up to flew up to Canada to Ottawa to speak at the head of government in Canada. There was a press conference where one of the liberal members of parliament up there was putting forth a document in front of the government that would basically bring the 9/11 question and the fact that a new investigation was required into the common talk amongst the Canadians, and that was it was a very interesting time. I met Graham McQueen while I was up there. We made an impact in Canada. So that was just one of the things that I did. I've gone to Washington D.C. With the group. Every time the 9/11 anniversary rolls around, if there is an event in New York, I have always gone down to it and participated. And the Washington one, I think it was in 2017, 2018, we went down there. We visited Congress. There was a lot to do. I mean, there's the one thing about AE 9/11 Truth is that we're an active group. We're constantly seeking new avenues to get this information out in front of the public, to get people interested, to get people to basically climb on board and join the movement. Because the more we have, the more people we have on board, it's snowballs, you know. One person talks to another person, talks to another person, and it gets the word out. Your show has been, a real steamroller in terms of getting the word out there. And so joining the board for me, I was so happy to meet Roland. I had a lot of interaction with Richard Gage. I was somewhat surprised and shocked at how that whole situation with his departure from AE 9/11 Truth, it really hurt us all. And yet, I think in the long run, you know, we need to stay stay focused, stay on point relative to what our mission is, really. And it has nothing to do with any conspiracies. That's not what we do. What we are doing is trying to awaken the public and get enough of a movement together to make a new investigation something that could really happen. And if we stray from that mission, we're just hurting ourselves. We're diluting, you know, what we're trying to do. It's so important to stay on point and to talk only about the destruction of three high-rise steel structures in the World Trade Center, which consequently destroyed the other structures in that complex and completely, you know, it wiped it out, along with almost 3,000 innocent people who were working in the buildings. My friend Frank DeMartini being one of them. That's our main focus. And I'm so honored and pleased to join the board and to get, you know, personally involved as we move this effort forward to make it a reality, a new investigation, an unbiased and true investigation. We did not get that with the 9/11 Commission. It was a whitewash, and they didn't stay on point. You know, they drifted, and they left so much out, relative to investigating the facts that were on the ground, you know, the video, the seismic imprints that were recorded up the Hudson River at Lamont Doherty. There is just so much evidence that this was a controlled demolition. This was not, a gravity collapse based on damage that was done from airplanes hitting these buildings. That's just not the case. And I'm like I said, I'm thrilled. We have great people, Kelly David and Ted Walter. There's just a good group here, a good solid group, and they've worked hard over the years. You know, I've watched the organization start out as a fledgling, struggling little group that really didn't have their act together. And over the years, there's been a lot of growing pains and a lot of movement and change. And parting company with Richard was a very painful one. But it's I think in the end it was for the best. And the group now is very tight, very strong, and very focused. So I'm really excited about that.
for our supporters out there, what are you looking to bring to AE 911 Truth in terms of perspectives or just, you know, ideas and such?
Well, I think that the fact that, you know, what I bring to this group is a personal connection to the actual event, you know, being so close to Frank, and Frank being the manager of construction for the Port Authority at the World Trade Center, you know, playing a key role in getting so many people out of the North Tower, you know, and that my connection to that, and my you know, deep connection to the World Trade Center, vis-a-vis my proximity to the Trade Center while I was in school with Frank, and knowing Frank, and you know, all the times that I visited the Trade Center, you know, with him, and saw so much. So I bring a personal connection, you know, to the organization and to the group, that I think makes it easier for the general public to feel that, you know, here's a guy that's you know, connected to this. Here's a guy who knows firsthand. You know, he met the people. He touched the building. He's been on the roof. He's been in the basement. He's, you know, he's been throughout the building. You know, he knows these buildings. I always tell people that Frank knew those buildings better than anybody. And I'm sure there were people that knew him better than him, but boy, did he know them. I mean, he had a deep love for everything about World Trade Center. It was in his blood. So, you know, I do bring that. And you know, I everything I do relative to the 9/11 movement and seeking the truth, I do this for Frank. You know, he's not here. He can't do it. I was his best friend. You know, we you know, helped each other out for 30 years. You know, had he lived, I would have been best friends with him now for 50 years. That's a long time. And, you know, I feel that those last 20 years were stolen from me by the, you know, removal of Frank from the picture in that horrific event. So, as I said, I do this for Frank, and I am so committed to never giving up. You know, that's my purpose in life, but it is my commitment, you know, to the movement. It's my commitment to honoring Frank. It's what he would have done, and so I'm going to do it. It's in my blood. I can't think of any other way. You know, we've been lied to. We've been sold a bill of goods. The American people have been hoodwinked, and it pains me greatly. You know, you talked about, you know, what is it that we can do to get people to wake up, and that is a difficult task. That is an extremely difficult task, because what we're asking them to do is to abandon their worldview in many ways. You know, the very idea that something else knocked those towers down, there were some other forces at work other than what we the people were told by our government, is extremely unnerving. I think, you know, if I wasn't connected, you know, I think if I lived in Iowa, you know, and didn't have any connection whatsoever to the World Trade Center, I would be in the same boat. You know, I, in spite of the fact that as an architect, I'm trained to understand how steel frame structures work and what they can and cannot do. Looking at the evidence, you know, watching the films, you know, maybe I would have my suspicions, but I think more likely than not, I would just walk away from it. So hopefully, if people get to see me, people get to know me and to say, well, hey, he seems like a regular guy. He seems like one of us, like a normal person. and he's got a lot of questions about what happened to those buildings. Maybe he's onto something. Maybe we should take a closer look. And, you know, hopefully I can, if I can play the slightest part in that's enough for me, you know, so the more the merrier. And that's really where I'm at. Again, I do this. I do this because I have to, you know. I had that connection to him. And we don't have, Frank was one of the ones, I think maybe 1,000 people just disappeared. They were vaporized, and he was one of them. They didn't find anything. They didn't find a bone. They didn't find a nose. They didn't find anything of Frank. He just disappeared, as did at least 1,000 others, maybe more. That's a plain fact. I think I can make a difference with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth by being me, by being myself, by presenting who I am and what I know about what happened that day, and who I know who is no longer here from that day, and his family that's still here, and I have a connection to them. So I put a personal face on it, and that's one of the things I loved about what we did with the movie Unspeakable. We put a personal face on it, and we got it out there in front of the public, and hopefully that'll have an impact. And whatever we can do to add to that impact is in my mind a positive step in the right direction.
So I mentioned New York City epicenters. And as we all know, there was a half-hour cut from this docu-series where they were going to feature World Trade Center evidence of controlled demolition on that day. The family members were going to get a chance to tell their stories. Unfortunately, they didn't really get to. You were one of the people who was interviewed for this, and you got to talk about your own suspicions surrounding the destruction of the World Trade Center towers on that day. I'm assuming you talked about Frank, but you'll be telling us, the audience here, what was it like being interviewed by Spike Lee and his team?
Boy, it was a real thrill. I remember getting a call from Ted Walter that Spike was doing this project, and Ted told me that he had mentioned to Spike my story and my connection. And that Spike was interested, and I might get a call from Spike. And I think the very next day, I got a call, not from somebody in his office, in his organization, but from Spike himself, which was pretty exciting. I went to school in the neighborhood where he grew up. And, I watched all his movies and so forth and so on. So I was really excited about it. And when Ted told me that, he was going to do a section that really played up what AE 9/11 Truth was all about. And it was going to probably be very sympathetic to our cause, to our movement, to get a new investigation. So I was really, really excited about that. And Spike did invite me to come down, one of his, I guess his chief assistants, trying to remember her last name, Judy. Anyway, she called me up and we had a long chat, and it turned out her son went to the same school that Frank's son went to, and that she had a connection to Frank and Nicole, and their kids knew each other. So that was kind of exciting. I knew the building that was Spike's headquarters. His studio was in a building that used to be an old parking garage around the corner from where I lived. And Frank and I used to park, we knew the owner and we knew the fellow who ran the place. And, we had motorcycles that we would park in front of our brownstones during the summer. But in the winter months, it was nice to put them somewhere else. They let us put them in the building that is now Spike's studio. So where I was being interviewed was one floor below where I used to park my motorcycle, and Spike got such a kick out of that. So it was just, talking to him was like, talking to an old friend. It was, and I didn't know him. I had never met him. It turned out Frank had met him and had done some work on a building that he lived in, which happened to be the building that I had originally renovated and lived in with the landlord who hired me to help him renovate the brownstone. And that's what Frank and I did in the beginning while we were in school. We renovated brownstones. So as I said, I sat with Spike, and the more I talked to him, the more I realized that, you know, he was one of us, you know, I was talking to people, a fellow of like mind, you know, he understood and he got it, you know, and he was unapologetic about making it clear, you know, that something was rotten in Denmark and we needed to get to the bottom of it. And that's what New Yorkers did. You know, the whole idea of NYC epicenters was to play up and to really, pay homage to New York City and the moxie that this town has. You know, it's a great town, and you know, New Yorkers stick together. You know, okay, we got a governor that was disgraced, but you know, he came up with the idea of New York tough. I don't know if he came up with it, but New Yorkers are tough. They always were, and they always will be. So anyway, it was just a wonderful experience to chat with him. And yeah, I was very excited. You know, I said, my God, here we've got this forward-thinking, well-established, member of society who's a brilliant filmmaker. Was on our side and was telling our story and was going to give us a chance to tell our story in his little docuseries. So you know, I was so excited. And then, you know, days before it came out, you know, and I knew that there was this 30-minute section, and that's what I was going to be part of. And you know, I find out that you know the what do you call it? The journalistic wing of our society read or you know took a look at it and decided, you know, you can't do this, Spike. You got to get this out of here. They put pressure on HBO. And Spike, and he basically figured, you know, if I'm going to get my piece done, I've got to pull this out. So he did. He pulled it out. And so when it came out and I watched it, I didn't expect to see myself at all. But I said, you know what? He did this. You know, and in my interview, he told me about other people that he interviewed, and you know, I wanted to see them on this. So I'm watching it. And I guess it was the third installment. There I was, you know, I was still in it. And it wasn't just me, you know, there were others that are in our group, you know, Bob McElvain and Willie Rodriguez, you know, who was an employee of the World Trade Center and a hero like Frank, got a lot of people out of there, you know, went in, risked his own life. And luckily he got out, you know, Frank didn't, but he did anyway, you know, so. And I thought it was brilliant of what Spike was doing. I could see what he was doing. You know, he was basically trying to introduce us early on so that we would have a greater impact in that final 30 minutes, because that's where we were. He had us at the end, the final 30 minutes. So it was a real, you know, I felt so elated in the beginning and so dejected in the end that it was like we missed our window. There was a brilliant window, the 20th anniversary of the events of the day, and we were going to really make an impact, you know, get out there in front of millions of viewers, and we didn't, you know, we didn't. But I got out there and I did talk about the destruction. You know, I said that those buildings were destroyed, and somehow that got through, you know, they didn't clip that. They left that in there. So that was kind of exciting. And, you know, I when I questioned them, Spike told me, he said, you know, I said, where is it? Can I see it? He said, no, I'm not showing it to anybody. It's under lock and key. But he said, I can tell you this. HBO doesn't own it. I do. And I'm going to do with it what I want to do with it. So he's not talking, but I have a feeling we haven't heard the last of Spike. There's definitely going to be something. It might be in 6 months. It might be in 6 weeks. It might be in 6 years. But sooner or later, you know, he's going to do something with that. I'll be shocked if he did. I really would. So there's more to come. let's see what he comes out with. But yeah, we need people like that, you know. We need people who the public trusts and the public expects the unexpected from. And certainly this is as unexpected as anything could be for Spike to come out and have questions about what happened that day the way we do. It's so important for the movement, for AE 9/11 Truth, because the bulk of his truth part was revolved around interviews with members of AE 9/11 Truth, including Richard Gage, and he had to cut all of that out. And it was a tragedy. It really was. We'll just have to see what happens.
And just to clarify for our audience, it's not that Spike Lee just caved to pressure from the media and from HBO. He was actually standing with the 9/11 Truth movement. He was saying, I have questions. He was standing with us. And just unfortunately, because of other matters, comments that came out from Richard, kind of created a contradiction in his films, as half of his film was about COVID. Yeah. And it's put him in an awkward position there. But it doesn't mean that Spike Lee is done with 9/11 Truth. And I don't know. I know as much as anybody else. I'm not trying to hint at anything. I don't have any insider knowledge on what's going on at Spike Lee's headquarters there in New York. But we may not be done with that yet. So you mentioned this, but I want to elaborate on it. And first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip that did make it into the docuseries, New York City Epicenters. This is with Bill here, and I want our audience to listen carefully to what Bill says here.
An article came out in Der Stern, a German news magazine. They were saying this guy, Frank DeMartini, saved our lives. We would have died. We were definitely going to, because we could not get out. And the stairwells on that floor were blocked. Anyway, so he saved those guys. And they couldn't get any farther up, so they began sweeping the building. And they... best guess is that they made it down to about the 20, somewhere between the 25th and the 15th floor before the before that building was demolished.
Now, notice the key word that Bill finishes it with, demolished. And I got to think, Bill, that you strategically chose that word when talking about these towers. Want to talk about that a little bit more?
Well, certainly they were demolished. There's no question about it. You know, controlled demolition implies that a building is demolished. And, that's where I've been, you know, since 2007, you know, and probably earlier. But certainly I don't buy the idea that these buildings were brought down in any other means or by any other means than controlled demolition, plain and simple. And again, as I said, I'm dying to know, you know, how they brought that off, you know, because it was, you know, bringing buildings down on purpose with explosives and incendiaries and, you know, weakening the structure in certain ways is an art form. It really is. I mean, it's very scientific, but there's an art to it. And very few people can do that, you know, have that expertise. And you got to start small. Yeah, you got it's like anything else. You know, when you want to be an airline pilot, you don't start out flying jumbo jets. You know, you start in a Piper Cub. You start in a small airplane and you build time and you work your way up. And that's the same way it is, you know, with these experts who are able to knock buildings down. So whoever did this was someone who knew what they were doing. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. But yeah, it was, you know, those buildings were demolished. There's just no other way to put it. And that's my term. And I'm sticking to it. That's just that simple. Just that simple. No other way to put it.
Right. That's really the only way that we can describe that. And I always try to be very careful. It's so easy to say collapse because everyone says that. Mm-hmm. I find myself catching myself saying it at times, but then I have to think, wait a second, they didn't collapse. That's this story. These were demolished. They were taken down. It was a controlled demolition on that day. So you don't even want to give them that little bit of room because it's the easiest thing to say, collapsed. You know, it's what we always think because the news media beat it into our heads. But I love how you slip that in there. So a little bit of truth gets in despite all the stuff that happened. Now, you also appeared in another film. We did a screening of it on the anniversary. It came out later in November, the final cut of it. It's called The Unspeakable. It's produced by AE911 Truth. Kelly David and Dylan Avery worked very hard on putting this together, and it took a very personal look at the people most affected by the destruction of the World Trade Center towers on that day, the family members, the friends of those who died. So it didn't focus a lot on evidence, though there was some, I believe, some talking of it in the interviews, but it focused on the personal stories, the emotional journeys of all these characters who have really been seeking truth ever since the day that it happened. Now, we may have talked a little bit about this on the anniversary event, but tell our audience, you know, your thoughts after having watched that film.
Well, I couldn't agree more that it really is focusing on individuals, on real people who suffered through those terrible days, the terrible day and the terrible days that followed it. And there's, and it was just, I think, four of us, you know, four individual instances of, you know, four people who died and the people that that love them that have to carry on afterwards. And, you know, I think that's just another aspect that the American public really don't get a chance to see. Most of what they see, you know, happens on the anniversaries when they read the names and, you know, they see the sad people, you know, many of them are the ones who, you know, there was this huge fund and if you took the funds, and many people had to, Frank's wife included, you know, she didn't have a job. Not only did she lose her husband and his income, but her job disappeared too. She worked in the World Trade Center. and her job was maintaining the structure of the World Trade Center. So, you know, that job went away. She was left with no means of support. And so she in the end, she took the deal. And when you took the deal, you signed a paper that said, because I'm taking this deal, I'm waiving all my rights, you know, to sue anybody for anything else. You know, this is my settlement, and I'm taking it, and that's what I'm going to do. And basically, that's what Nicole has done. She has washed her hands of it. You know, he could have gotten out. She got out. She was standing right next to him when it happened on the 88th floor, and she and most of his staff got out, but Frank didn't go with them. He went up. And he got people off two floors above him before he started his descent to come down through. And he didn't just come down through and stay in the stairwell and go all the way down. He got out on every single floor and made sure that that floor was clear. You know, he was like the captain of a ship. And he wasn't coming out of that ship until everybody, all souls, were off that ship. So, you know, he paid the ultimate price because he didn't get out. Yeah, it's... it is a tragedy, and I don't know. It's hard, you know. And I'm glad that I got a chance to get to for people to see me, you know, to meet my daughter. You know, Tara and I were scheduled to have dinner with Frank that night, that Tuesday night. You know, I had gotten together with her every week. She was in college at the time, going to school in the city, and I lived out in Rockland County in the burbs, and I would go in every week and have dinner with her. And you know, Frank lived in Brooklyn, so, but he worked in Manhattan, and we were going to get together that day somewhere in Lower Manhattan and have dinner, and you know, we weren't able to do that. And I have to say, Frank was probably closer to my daughter than my brother was, because Frank saw her all the time. You know, he was the uncle that was there all the time. You know, my brother lived in Connecticut. You know, we saw him on holidays and you know, every once in, you know, two or three times a year, we'd go up to Connecticut and spend a weekend with my brother and Tara's cousins and Justin. My son was devastated when that happened. You know, he was, let me see, Tara was 17, 18. I think she was 18 or 19. She was 19. So he would have been about 13 years old. And that's a hard thing, you know. Frank's kids were in their, his daughter was 10 and his son was 8. You know, they were little kids. They were little kids. And they didn't get it as much as my kids did. You know, when you're 8 and 10, you really, you know, it's hard to understand. Whereas when you're a little older, when you're a teenager, you start to know what death is and how permanent that is, and that person's never coming back. You know, it really hits home to a teenager. And my kids, they had such a hard time with it, and so the people got to see that, you know, and to see that pain and that suffering in a person who is not buying the story, you know, is not buying a bogus story. Well, buying the official story. Let's not call it bogus, because a lot of people don't see it as bogus. You know, they see it. That's the facts. That's what happened. And they're going to believe it come hell or high water. So we have a tall order. And I think, you know, to convince them otherwise. And I think for them to meet us, it forces them to realize that we're not a bunch of kooky, you know, tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists. That's not who we are. You know, we're real people. We're flesh and blood, and we bleed just like they do, and we cry just like they do, you know, and we suffer just like they do. They got to see that in this movie. So I was absolutely thrilled. I think Dylan is a brilliant filmmaker. His movie Loose Change was, I thought, phenomenal. You know, it really laid bare, and it got people thinking, you know, and we're not, the truth movement is not that small. It's pretty darn big, you know, 5% of the population, maybe it's bigger than that now. I don't know, but there's a lot of us and there needs to be a lot more. And I think the movie went a long way towards bringing that point home and making people at least say, okay, these people aren't nuts. You know, they're real people. I don't agree with them, but they're real people, and maybe I should have a little more respect, you know, for what they think. And you know, that opens a little crack. So hopefully that crack will widen with time. And to me, that's what that movie was all about. And I think we did a pretty darn good job of it.
That's right. It's gotten a lot of great reviews from the Truth Movement. We're actually going to go ahead and play a segment from that film right now.
Straight ahead. I'll never set foot in that Freedom Tower. That's not my cup of tea. I call it the blood building. A lot of people died to put that there.
Not enough.
Unnecessarily. But I took my books, I took my toys, I took my tools, I took my grandfather clock, and I took my car, and I left. You know, I came up here. I put everything in storage, and I moved into this little cottage here. Didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And this is where, in this cottage, is where I found architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And I look at it as, this is what I do for Frank. This is what I, not just for me. I mean, it's a lot for me. And Frank is gone, and nothing's going to bring him back. He's history. You know, when those explosives tore that building apart, it tore the people apart too. So the saving grace is that Frank didn't feel a thing. You know, he just disappeared.
Now, Bill, in our last 10 minutes or so, however long it goes here, I probably asked you this on the show before when we were doing just audio. I've asked other people to talk about this, professionals, architects and engineers, to address their peers, to address their colleagues out there. And I always treat each episode as if it's its own show, because who knows, you know, someone could just wander upon this one show and this will be our only chance to reach them. So now that you can look into the camera and say, can you address the architects and engineers out there who might be watching this program as to why they should look into the World Trade Center controlled demolition evidence and why they should put their name to that petition at AE 9/11 Truth?
Well, that's a tall order, to get a professional to put his name on the line for something that is controversial. And, you can say what you want about AE 9/11 Truth and the truth movement in general. And if we're anything, we're controversial. And the powers that be, the media especially, which is an arm of the powers that be, make that crystal clear. That we're, again, as I said, we're somebody that you should look at us and then look away. And when you ask somebody to sign on to this petition for a new investigation, especially someone, because it's a member of the professional community, the architects and the engineers, which we are. There are millions of us, and yet only 3,500. Now, that's not a small number, but compared to everybody in the United States who's a registered architect or a professional engineer, it's a drop in the bucket. It's a really small portion of that group. You're asking these people to jeopardize their ability to earn a living. You're asking a lot. You're asking a lot. The average Joe, who is just walking down the street and they're a school teacher or a banker or, a carpenter, whatever, they ask them to sign it. They're not putting their livelihood on the line. But when you're asking an architect to do that, you're asking a lot. And so I think it's important for us to get the message, to get them to at least look at it. They don't have to sign on. They don't have to buy into it. We just need to open up a little crack of curiosity on their part to look at it and say, maybe these guys are onto something. Maybe there is something there. Because that's how the 3,500 of us that are in, that's how we got here, a little crack and we got in. So that's the important thing is to just get them to say, okay, I'll take a look, and some of them will look deep enough and look hard enough and ask the right questions and realize that, I think these guys are right. I think there is something fishy here. There has to be another explanation. And those are the ones that are going to sign on. They're going to come on board. It's a slow process. And as I said, we're not asking a little bit. We're asking a lot. You're putting your name on the line. I'm putting my name on the line. For me, it was easy, because I lost Frank. And Frank was an architect. He was a licensed architect, just like me, I don't know how many. It would be a good question to find out how many of those 2,900, whatever it was, that died in the World Trade Center, how many of them were registered architects or professional engineers? I'd be curious to know. I don't know. But we do need to approach these guys, and I have to hand it to the engineers among us, because they're going out there and they're Richard was trying to get to the AIA, and the AIA just, and I've got friends in the AIA, and they just look the other way. No, that's too controversial. We're not touching that. We got buildings to build. We got buildings to design. We got work to do. We don't have time for that. As a matter of fact, one of my, and he's a big shot in the AIA in New Jersey, and his wife worked in the South Tower, She wasn't at work that day. I don't know what happened, but luckily she stayed home that day. She didn't go to work. But she was there in the bombing in 93. And that was pretty, pretty scary. She came home. She looked like she was a coal miner when she got home. It was scary. But Jerry, he just doesn't want to hear it, And there's a lot of them. Ted and I went, some woman called us up and she had an architect friend who was willing to talk to Ted and I. out. So we went down. I went down to the city. Ted was working in the city at the time, and we went and talked to this guy, and he was vehemently against any idea other than the official story. I mean, he tried his best, and as you said, Andy, you know, they make fools of themselves. They come up with these preposterous ideas. You know, this architect, he worked in an office in Manhattan. You know, he's a young man. He was probably in his early 40s. And, you know, he talked about, well, you know, and we were like, how could you make, you know, molten steel? Well, it was pressure. It was pressure. I was like, pressure? I mean, he was just picking at straws, you know, whatever he could come up with. But he believed these things, you know? He absolutely, you could see it in his face. You could hear it in his voice. He really believed what he was saying, you know, that there wasn't controlled demolition, you know, and he didn't buy into, and all you have to do is open your eyes and do a little research, and you can hear, you know, video of firemen talking about the explosions, and then they're sitting there, you know, wiping the dust off their faces, and hey, did you call your mom yet? No. Boom! You know, there's this huge explosion in the background. It's like, it's as plain as the nose on your face, you know, there were explosions that were happening all the time. So, but they don't hear it, you know. And again, as I said, it's their ability to earn a living, I think, that gets in the way. And that's a real big hurdle to get over, to get through to these guys and to get them to sign on. And some of them do. Bless them. Bless their souls. The ones that do. And the ones that don't, I respect them. You know, I have nothing but respect for them, because they are designing the world that we live in, the built environment. And that's a big job. And I can't praise them highly enough for that, and I certainly can't knock them down for not joining us. I just hope that you know, that's all I ask, is just take a little look, you know, do a little research, admit that maybe, you know, just maybe some of what we're saying makes sense, you know. That's all I ask. And I don't think that's asking a lot. So we'll see. Hopefully, we'll make some progress.
That's right. We are further ahead than we were 10 years ago. I mean, when people say Building 7 now, the knee-jerk reaction of others is to think of controlled demolition. Whereas before, they wouldn't even have known what that is. Now, if they think about Building 7, it's associating their mind with the concept of controlled demolition. So we've managed to attach that to the memory of World Trade Center 7, and we keep on making progress. I mean, we came very close to having a half-hour segment out on HBO, and it doesn't mean that everything is done now. You know, we keep on going.
There are more chapters to this story.
Get back on your feet and keep moving forward. So we're going to keep on doing that, and I think that there is a big awakening to matters like this coming down our path. And Bill, you're one of the people that's going to be responsible for it, along with people out in the audience right now. So thank you so much for being so outspoken on this issue for so many years, and now for being part of the AE 9/11 Truth family on the board. And of course, for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
It's a pleasure, Andy. Thank you.
So folks, that is it. That is another episode of 9/11 Freefall. Again, I call this a work in progress. We are still building. There may be some changes as we go along, but I want to hear what you think about this show, about the presentation here on video. You know, tell us what could work better. Tell us what you think about the graphics behind us, maybe my spinning blue ball here on it. I kind of like that blue ball, so I might defend that, but whatever. Any thoughts that you have, I want to hear them. Or if you're very happy with it, we like to hear that too. Tell us what you think. You can go to 911freefall.com. There's a contact box right on there. Just type it in and I will receive it and I will read it. But thank you for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you next week. This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Have a great week. Good luck.